This is Philosophy versus Improv, where two sages try to teach each other a thing or two, and maybe you, the audience, get something out of it as well.
It's Philosophy versus Improv. I'm Mark Linsenmeyer, your philosophy marksman, always hitting it right in the bullseye. But as with the improv, maybe a little to the left, maybe a little to the right.
And I'm Bill Arnett, an improv sniper, but a philosophy... They say two left feet. How about two left eyes? Is that a thing?
I mean, that's cosmetically creative.
Oh, constant headaches. The headaches of just having two left eyes.
We've got a pair of guests who are related in a certain media-like way. Whichever one of you introduces yourself first on the show, please introduce yourself.
I usually do it. I'm Sean Villiers from the Seriously Wrong podcast.
Aaron Moritz, also Seriously Wrong podcast. And I would say we're both like relative experts on philosophy and improv, both. No degrees in either or like, but you know, we do things like that, you know, read about it sometimes.
Yeah, degree from the College of Life.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. The streets.
Relative experts compared to like someone at a bus stop or someone that you might walk by while walking through a forest path.
Unless it's a philosophy professor at the bus stop.
Yeah. Oh, man. Imagine the conversations. Boring.
I think the bus is probably the place, if you want. It's like the agora. Is that right? Or are you agoraphobic? Where Socrates would do his preaching.
Well, it's where you have people kind of trapped, and if you try and talk philosophy at them, they can't really leave. Like, they can go to the other side of the bus, but...
Yeah, it's a mandatory part of a lot of philosophy conversations, is finding some context where they can't leave. That's where you get started.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And if they all go to the other side of the bus will tip. So there's self-preservation. But it depends on how bad your philosophy is. Maybe they will choose rationally. It's a rational matter of rational choice. Choose to tip the bus rather than to listen to one more word of your bullshit.
Or maybe the philosophy person is able to pick up on social cues. Imagine that.
I mean, I think the more philosophy you learn, the more that goes out the window.
Okay, fair enough.
I mean, that is supposedly one of the things, I mean, the way I do improv is I just kind of talk and then I stop talking and then I start talking again. You know, it's sort of a one-way thing. I run out of breath after a little while, so I have to let someone else talk, but none of that actually enters my brain. But I hear the way you're supposed to do improv involves accepting information, listening, social cues.
Yeah. And sometimes those social cues aren't words, but behaviors, tones.
Smells, scents, odors. Tell us a little about your show before we really get into this. How could a show mix improv? And it's got to be some of it scripted, right? Some of those little bits where you're going really fast, or you improv it and then you just edit it really tightly together.
Generally, we are improvising. Often we'll have in Seriously Wrong, we do a mixture between conversations about politics, philosophy, culture, etc. And then we'll also have sketch comedy segments. The typical method is to improv, let it all out, and then edit it down tight. So all the loose ends get hidden by the time it's broadcast. But usually we are finding some angle going in. Like, we're not just going completely off the cuff usually. So we have a little bit of pre-improv where we're like, oh, this is the bit. This is the connection between the subject matter and what we're going to talk about. And then from that, we kind of let our freak flag fly and just go for it and then cut down 10 minutes to 4 minutes. And that's the finished product.
Yeah, I found doing endings is most frequently when we'll script something out, when we're like, okay, we got a lot of threads to tie together here. If we do like a full episode of improv sketches, then like trying to stick the landing, maybe we'll script some of it out. But yeah, it's like we'll pre-talk and we'll do some discussions and do jokes beforehand. So there's lots of stuff loaded up. And then, yeah, you just edit it to make yourself sound good.
Okay. I'm taking notes.
Yeah, and sometimes we'll do a long form, like we've done episodes. We did a Christmas special last year that's just like an hour and a half of bit after bit after bit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And something like that involves planning at every level of the process, but we're never really like reading dialogue or anything like that. It's like Curb, you know, where you have, these are the scenes, this is how we're going to go through it, but each individual scene is just going with the flow.
And I know that I appeared on your show in 2018, and that was episode 89. So when did you actually start this? How many years?
2014. So we just had our 10th anniversary special recently.
Wow.
Or I guess it was almost a year ago now.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost 10 years, yeah, been doing it.
we're into our 300s now. It's 323, I think, was the most recent one, if I remember correctly. Got a lot of experience with this. And this format really kind of evolved organically. We started off just thinking we wanted to talk about politics and stuff. And then just in the editing process, I remember we had a conversation that was like, it feels like we just want to go a little bit further. We want to find some interesting angle. So we started with like really short fake ads, stuff like that. And then often the comments that we got back from people was, oh, I really like this bit and stuff like that. And it was some of the stuff we enjoyed doing the most too. And then it kind of evolved into a bigger and bigger part of our show over time. And then kind of became like our trademark thing that we do that's out of the norm. So it's core to our identity now. And it's also, I did improv since I was like 12, 13. I've always really loved improv. So it's one of my favorite things to do on the show too.
Cool. Outstanding. It's nice to hear you all speak with such cool confidence over around your process. And that's not with the quest for eyeballs that is taking over humanity at the present moment, at least this side of humanity, having people be able to speak about their process coolly and confidently is refreshing.
Also, they're Canadian, so it's the Canada Dry sort of style.
So we got to factor that in. So in truth, this was just pure desperation is what we heard with a Canadian accent.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Please, 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 please watch our show. It's funny. It's really good. That's what we heard, but through a Canadian filter is what you're telling me,
Mark. We put a lot of work into it, please. We're begging you. Yeah. We need more.
We in America, having just been defeated roundly, now we're in despair. We just can't talk about anything without breaking up, really. So I envy you Northerners quite a bit.
We've got about a year until we have something similar.
Well, you'll be up there sniffing our farts. I apologize.
Very true.
It's the Canadian way.
Becoming the 51st state is a thing in the news recently. That you, I like how you only get to be one state, according to this bullshit proposal that is floating around.
The single largest state.
You can't have like all your province. That would be, oh, no, no, no. That's way too much influence. Just one.
One great big state.
Yeah, we only get two senators.
Yeah.
So what is the philosophical or improvisational issue? You've been doing this. You've been muddling around on your own. You haven't had expertise like the two gentlemen that you now face. So what is a thing that you've been wondering about? We could elevate to a new level, and then you could go back to your show, and you could share it around to the Canadian wilderness.
Yeah, I don't know. Philosophically, how do you have a good life? You got like two sentences you can just... let us know how to do that.
The thing about having a good life is it's not about describing it. It's about doing it. There you go. So let's do this. Let's do this. Let's get into a scene that will show all the chops that you're bringing to the table, the delicious, the rarest cuts. Bill, do you want to set us up, or do you gentlemen want to, you're probably a little familiar with this show. Do you want to launch us into some kind of scene?
I didn't think of anything beforehand. I was...
Well, that's, there's a thing that, in improvisation, there's a technique that's called improvising an idea, where you come up with something and you don't actually plan. You just say, Sean, I'm putting you on the spot. You're on the spot. Start us a scene.
Right. Okay. So the setting is that we are four longtime neighbors and friends who have been separated for a great time. And we're all pricks who think that we have figured out the secret to life. And we are going to pompously brag to one another about how we have unlocked the true secret to a good life.
So just continuing the way I've been running the dialogue already.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Trying to make it easier.
That's great. That's perfect.
Fellas!
Hey!
Oh, my God. Look, you came in.
So long.
Yeah.
Oh, they'll let anyone in here.
It's not even high school reunion time. Everybody's back in town.
Yeah, you are looking a bit scraggly, all of you. Yeah.
So, how's life?
Well, you look at my rumpus room and tell me. Take a look around. What do you think? How do you think life's going?
Mid, I guess. Yeah, looks pretty good.
You got the Wii. You got the 1990s gaming system. It looks...
bumper pool table. You can turn the top over, play poker.
I mean, it's nice, but I think there's more to life than material things. Just me, but...
Yeah, I mean, have you seen my wife?
I mean, I've seen your wife, but have you explored... I mean, I shouldn't say. I kind of have an arrangement with my wife that it's kind of coming back to the small town, you know, seeing the small town ways, it's a little difficult, you know, when I've been out in the big city, Sioux City.
Oh, city boy. Bragging about his life in the big city.
You know, I usually find people who say that material things don't matter are people who just sometimes have a lot of trouble kind of figuring out how to make it work for them, you know?
Amen.
Interesting feedback. Happy to pass that on.
Let me get y'all a beer.
Yeah, beer would be great.
Yeah.
Do you have a Zima?
I have a tap. A tap. How about that, huh?
I mean, okay.
Kegerator.
All right. If we want to do
no selection of crafts, different craft beers, or just one tap.
Well, just one. Hey, y'all, I have my own tap in the rumpus room.
I mean,
it's fine.
I didn't mean anything by it.
No, it's one.
It's perfect. It's great.
I have some craft mugs. How about that? I mean, you can get just
a lot of people are happy with one tap. Some aren't, and they have a finer palate. They like to mix things up more often, and they find that one tap is too limiting. But I'm not like that at all. I'm happy to just have what's on offer. I'm really easygoing. And I find that actually one of the secrets to a good life is to be willing to take things as they come and without judgment. So I'm happy to take that.
Okay.
I don't think that's right. I think that you need to express your judgments. You got to call a spade to be racist about it. And that's not a racist statement. It's just a spade, you know.
Wow.
In the big city, when we run across a place that just has one option, well, there's two choices. You could go somewhere else, or you could go so far into that one option that you kind of come out the other side. That's like meta.
Yeah, if they do one thing, but they do it really, really good and they're the best in the world, then it's okay.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Other than that, I like a bit of variety.
So judging on your game systems, I'm sure this beer will be.
Yeah, this is nice.
Top shelf.
Somebody didn't leave their small town, and they are regional assistant junior vice president of Midwest, South Canada, Central, Manitoba, Saskatchewan, sales of shower accessories.
Now, you know, that I agree. Being a big fish in a small pond is sometimes better than, you know, going to the big city. But like, who really cares about you there, right? Like, you're kind of a nobody, kind of nobody likes you or thinks about you. Or I don't know. I'm just...
Well, that's what
that's
I tell
the thing
myself.
That I imagine could happen.
That's what I tell myself all the time. It's like, I have this. Why imagine the things I could or could not have? I have this. I have a cold beer, you know? Why try? Why go for anything else?
You know? Sure. Well, I'm enjoying a freshly caught Chilean sea bass, not even available in the provinces here. I think about the small town, and I'm probably missing out on the thing that I, you know, already experienced as a younger person.
Yeah, I mean, I personally don't even root myself anywhere. You know, small town, big town, that's the old world. That's the old way of seeing things.
Where are you living these days? I don't even...
This backpack right here is my home, the one that I brought in. I travel. I've seen so much. I've tasted so many beers, so many sea basses. I've completely separated from Melissa and the kids. And I'm just...
What?
You know, I'm hitting all of the provinces, all the territories, visited Europe. I mean, I meet people and they say, how are you so free? And I say, you could be free too. You just have to let go. And it's actually, I don't envy anyone.
Where do you sleep? I mean, you got a bed?
Interesting definition of freedom, honestly.
Where do you poop?
Sorry, go on. Yeah. Public washrooms, I guess.
To poop. Yeah, there's washrooms. You know, I big washrooms, small washrooms, public washrooms, private washrooms. You know, you work it out when you have to go. And for sleeping, you know, the connections that you make on the bus, on the street, you know, people, when they meet a free person, they see, where are your shoes? I say, I don't need them anymore. I'm free. And they say, do you want to come sleep on my couch? Do you want to come sleep in my guest room? I've got a cheese platter. You know, I've got cheese platter on the mind. I had one last night. I was staying with this incredible couple. We were playing Catan and they said, come back anytime. And that's my day-to-day life. I have no trouble sleeping, actually. I've actually been sleeping like a baby and pooping like a baby, too.
Well, that's one way to be happy, I guess. I mean, I just have a big house with a big bed and kind of like the newest cars. And like not a lot of people in town here have the car that I have. So compared to them, I would say that that's true freedom. I can kind of do whatever I want, whenever I want, and have whatever I want because I'm rich. That's what makes me happy. So,
right. You mentioned Catan earlier. Check out this. I got a couple Catans over here on the wall.
Mm.
They're from Japan.
Ooh.
And I guess they call them katanas in Japan. But I've been collecting swords and things.
I mean, I actually made, we made our own samurai Catan expansion. You know, it's pretty much the envy of the gaming community in the big city, in Sioux City.
Is that a game? Is it a...
Yes.
We're talking about swords or games? Talking about swords or games?
So it's the regular Catan, but you have, it has extra players and it has special Japanese rules that instead of the thief, it has a Ronin. He roams the countryside and drives you out. You know, it kind of, it adds a different historical perspective. We kind of like to role play the courtly, mostly about Ming Dynasty. You know, I know that's China, but, you know, the wars. I mean, it's really an expansive sort of an oriental adventures thing. And I know people think that that's an offensive term, but it's really not.
You've always been a little weird, Mark. I'll say it. You've always been a little weird into those interesting, weird things and whatnot and movies that, you know, you have to go to a special theater to see.
Yeah.
You can't just see at the AMC, you know. And that's fine, I guess. That's, you know, each their own, but... Do you want me to throw on Die Hard? I can throw on Die Hard on the big screen, if that's...
I mean...
Oh, yeah. What's the square footage on that bad boy?
Ooh, well, it's 72-inch, and what, 16 by 9 ratio, 72 diagonal, Pythagorean theorem, I'll get you square inches.
I'm going to pull out the calculator.
You tell me.
Yeah, I usually just pay someone to figure that kind of stuff out.
Oh, boy, I wish.
I know a great appraiser if you ever want someone to see whether those swords are knockoffs or legit, or I don't know. They look kind of, you know, I don't want to be judgy, but they look like maybe someone made them in a garage or something, not really from Japan.
Well, I got them in Japan, but it was at the airport in Japan. So it was, it was in Japan. They are made in Japan.
Could have been imported from somewhere else. The airport, you know, it's, who knows.
A lot of planes coming. Maybe the sword was on those planes.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, in ancient Japan, the samurai did not use just their katana for battle. They used it for just about everything. It was like their Swiss army knife, but it was a katana.
Spreading butter on...
Yeah. Yeah. I like to do that kind of stuff myself because if you're in a restaurant, only the most exclusive restaurants, you know, so they sort of, they allow more kinds of behaviors that maybe a regular public restaurant would not. But... being able to pull out a 2-foot blade to spread butter, that really makes an impression.
Oh, yeah. You don't have to leave a tip then because you put on such a good show for everyone. Mm-hmm. They're enriched. It's like it's like getting 10, 50, and 20% right there.
Yeah.
It's like, this tip is sharp. You don't want this tip. You point at the blade, and then they know.
Right. And even just paying for the meal in the first place, sometimes you can, like Picasso, just draw a picture and, like, this is some art.
Oh, that's what I've been doing almost exclusively for months now, is my artistic skills they're getting me access everywhere. And yeah, and actually on that, after Die Hard or before Die Hard or whatever, do you have like a shower here, a clean towel like that I could use?
Yeah, we can.
I got a whiff of myself.
Okay, that was you. Okay, that's what that, okay.
All right, well, I got some scented bath oils that I brought along if you want to use that. Oh, I know a regular shower, you know, usually doesn't quite do it. It leaves you a little stinky.
Well, I'll take some of those right now and just I'll put it over on my neck and
I'm sometimes sensitive to that kind of thing. Is it essential oils? Like what? Maybe.
I mean, it's mostly the essence of Chilean sea bass. I find that's a really exclusive odor. Pretty much nobody else.
Oh yeah.
Except people that fish for the sea bass tend to sport that odor. But I'm happy to share it with you all if that's not going to bug you.
Well, I try to go with the flow. It's the flow of the rivers, the flow of the seas, any sort of flow, any time. So sea bass, sign me up.
What about your kids, Sean? You mentioned that you're not, are you talking to your kids? Are you seeing your kids?
Yeah, we've exchanged letters. Sometimes if I'm in free Wi-Fi range, we'll do a quick call. And they support it, actually. They're 5 and 7, and they go to school and they say, my dad's freer than your dad. And the other kids, like, yeah, that makes the other kids cry sometimes to think that their dad is not as free. But we all have to make sacrifices. And yeah, they're growing up incredibly. They're even going without shoes because they have positive male role models.
Does a 5-year-old have to make sacrifices? Is that what, I mean, I try to provide so my children don't have to make sacrifices, you know? 5 seems a little young for sacrifices.
You know? I mean, that's why that I've chosen not to have kids and think really no one should have kids. The state of the world, everything's going downhill. It's probably better to just not inflict that on the world, but you know, to each his own.
I think some people should have kids and some people shouldn't. And we have examples of both of those types of people in the room right now. And, you know, yeah, we can figure out which is which. I don't, you know, I don't want to
let me top you up.
Let me say necessarily.
Get that glass top you up.
I've just always tried to reinforce, you know, from a young age, you know, life is sacrifice. Life is struggle. It's a struggle for survival. And yeah, like, I think there's a certain strength that comes with that and a certain freedom. And sometimes the youngest especially says, when will you come home? And I say, I'm on camelback right now. I can't talk. maybe someday. And he understands.
Well, I think life is struggle. I think you're right. And I think if you achieve in that struggle, you get to put the plaques on the wall that show your success. You know, I think every time I come down here and see the kegerator and the 72-inch television, it's like, take that struggle, you know, that's that it looks like. And I'm sure Aaron can, he's probably got a better, bigger TV than I do.
Oh, yeah, much bigger.
Awesome. That's awesome. That's awesome. That's a winner, right? That's
thank you. Yeah.
Take that struggle.
I worry that this is a very conventional sort of measure. That yes, I do enjoy a big TV as much as the next person, but you know, it's more what it's made of. A lot of people think plasma have gone out, but plasma is where it's at.
Oh, OLED versus, yeah, totally.
I mean, my TV is the night sky. My TV is the open ocean. You know, my TV is the side of the highway, watching the trucks bring the goods and services to the people, you know. Yeah, it's a value change, but it roots you in a place where you have a life that isn't this rat race struggle. I'm not, oh, who has the biggest TV, or oh, who has the most pixels per square inch. I feel like I can really see the big picture in a lot of ways. And the big picture is freedom. It's a lack of accountability. It's a lack of questioning. It's just going, and it's walking bare-souled through the glass, lying down in the forest, being surrounded by butterflies, having a deer eat canned tuna from your palm. And yes, that did happen to me. This is the type of life we could all have. And I just don't understand how anyone feels differently. But, you know, one of the things I've learned in going with the flow is just accepting other people are different places in their journey. And everyone's eventually going to come where I am.
What kind of canned tuna?
Oh, albacore, you know, white tuna, whatever you can get.
Are the 8 million people in New York City going to get deer to eat out of their hand? I mean, is that reasonable? Is that something we can arrange, you know? I don't know.
Well, I don't know the current numbers of deers, but it doesn't seem implausible over time if it was sequentially organized.
I mean, I don't know why a deer, exotic animals. You got to go to those safaris. If you feed a giraffe out of your hand, that's something.
Well, I'm working towards that. I am. I'm working towards that. And I'm not worried. It will happen.
Well, I mean, to me, it's not about how big the TV is. It's about why you can afford the big TV, which is having success in this world and having a lot of money. And like, sure, maybe a 72-incher isn't that impressive to some people, but compared to certain other people, it's quite impressive.
I mean, I don't have to have a large television. I can have a large television. I think that's, I don't want you to think I'm shallow. I don't want you to think that I'm somehow just in it. Oh, I want the best thing. I want the best thing. I don't. I want what I can get. You know, I think that's, you know, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah, and some people can get the best, and some
people get more. Good. You know, more.
And some people can get the best, and they refuse it, which is even, I think, more meaningful.
I guess it's just so easy. It's not that I devalue material possessions. It's just people that think, you know, you have to really work hard and be on the ball to achieve the kind of wealth that 3 out of the 4 of us have achieved. You know, you just have to ignore some of those rules. My colleagues at Blackwater and I, we found quite a lot of ways, really, if just a matter of how much we need, you know, to each according to his need, you know, if you ignore the rules that rule lesser men. I mean, that's kind of, I'm sorry, this is sort of inside baseball.
I agree. Rules govern lesser men. It's full agreement there. And some little nitpicks on the edges, but yeah, no. Free from rules. Freedom, a.k.a. freedom. The good life.
Is Blackwater the mercenary?
Yeah, yeah.
The private security contractors.
Jobs that other groups might find too distasteful. You know, that's just money left on the table. So we just go right in there I send people. I sit back behind the desk. I'm not going to.
You're in the office.
Do that myself. Oh, absolutely.
I wish you good luck with that. I mean, I think that there are good ways to earn money and bad ways to earn money. And some people might end up in jail and other people might end up lauded as a responsible corporate CEO down the road, hopefully one day.
Are you staying safe, Aaron? Tell me you're staying safe. You saw the news. I hope you're staying safe.
I'm not a CEO yet. Look, and this moment will pass. And, you know, maybe that particular CEO did some bad thing. I want to be a CEO people love.
That's a new thing. I think there's some room in that space to be a CEO people like. Because it seems that a lot of people don't.
No.
And is it jealousy? Is it, you know, I don't know.
There's an epidemic of closed-mindedness, that's for sure. I see that all the time. And speaking of money being left on the table, if I find money on a table, I take it. If I find a half-eaten piece of toast on the table, I take it, you know, and I mean, that's what freedom looks like in a lot of ways. And the toast is usually good.
I'm just going to put some money on the table right there. I mean, I'm totally cool if you need something to tide you to the next destination.
Thank you so much. Oh my God. This is most of the way to a bus ticket, but that's amazing.
Yeah. You might have to get some of that converted because it's, you know, denaries, but, They accept it.
Right. Oh.
Yeah, you don't dumpster dive. You dumpster thrive.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I meant that as a joke.
But quite literally, I dumpster thrive. So I appreciate you saying that.
I have found it's best to not actually be listed as CEO or really as any official position with the company because legally then things can't get back to you. It's sort of better to be the power behind the throne, someone who has so much wealth and so much power that nobody's ever heard of them.
Yeah, those kind of backroom dealings, it's not my style. Mm-hmm, I kind of like to play by the rules, play up front, and just help people with your companies, and then they will help you by making you rich.
You always were a front room dealer.
Yes, thank you.
Ever since the old days.
So Die Hard?
Die Hard, and then pictures of our kids. How about that?
That's great. Sounds good. Do you have Wi-Fi?
I do have a Wi-Fi.
I had to delete them off my phone.
Yeah.
I'll just pull mine up on 5G, so I don't need Wi-Fi. But
I'm going to go ahead and lay some lines of coke on the table just to...
Oh, I mean, it's Die Hard.
Yeah. I mean, to get through Die Hard. It's just like we used to do in the old days.
Oh.
But we had to use sugar.
Typically, I forgo such things, but for old time's sake, it is a way to get closer to God also, I think.
We stopped there. We did it. We'll end there. We got drugs. It's usually
that was meant to be the closing gesture. Okay. Try to find something to wrap this up. Either we get arrested, somebody's going to die.
Yeah, I pull out the silencer revolver or something. Or...
I guess heroin might have been a better complete silencer of the group.
They caught that guy apparently. Hey,
who shot the healthcare CEO, for anyone who's under.
I pride myself in talking to people kind of across the political spectrum and different levels of political engagement. But almost everyone I spoke to says, well, that guy killed a lot of people, which I was surprised. Like that's like the consent, even like the comment section on Ben Shapiro videos and stuff is just like, yeah, it's a fascinating cultural moment, I would say.
I know. And could the general public at large suddenly be infected with some classism, class awareness, you know what I'm saying? Is this getting people to wait a minute, you know, or will this be the cool thing?
Yeah, I don't know. It's an unusually popular assassination, for sure.
Hilarious. And my favorite part was the people chiding the public for not caring. Someone was murdered. We should feel bad about this. Well, why is no one, you know, up in arms? Like, that was my favorite part about the whole thing. Where are the tears? Where is the memorials? I'm sorry. I don't want people to die. But, yeah.
Well, I was thinking, you know, with these assassination attempts during the Trump campaign, that people who seem willing to, hey, I'm going to take one for the team. I probably will not get out of this alive, but maybe I can accomplish something. With, you know, I guess that's a not terribly uncommon thing in terms of world history, but it seems not to go with our individualist ethic. That's a good thing about the individualistic ethic, that we aren't like, you know what? This is important enough to pass this bill. I'll let myself be shot by cops in order to get that. I don't know. Maybe opportunities isn't there. They say it's a land of opportunity, but, you know, I don't see those opportunities really clearly.
I don't know if it's the best way to go about political change, but I think when people feel desperate enough, stuff like this, like, just does happen. Like, you have a population large enough and people feeling badly enough about a situation, whether that's Donald Trump running for president again or, like, yeah, this healthcare CEO, we will maybe now find out a bit more details if there was like a personal connection to the shoe. I don't know if we have any of that info yet, but
yeah, this stuff I heard was really like headlines at this point. I think this came out today, but he had like back surgery earlier this year. He's 26, so he just got off his parents' insurance probably. Apparently his back surgery is very painful. This company is like pulling away a lot of support from people. So I think there's like a real personal element in this case. And yeah, I think it goes without saying, we want to create a society where no one sees this as a viable alternative to what they're being offered. And when you have a healthcare system, which is degrades people really, and like the financial costs of facing, you know, people lose their family members. I was reading this Reddit thread where all these people are sharing stories about this specific company and like their kid being denied coverage and then dying and things like that. And like, that's the realest stuff in the world.
Yeah.
So I think insofar as you have the society structured in such a way where something that goes against, I think, the most basic human instinct, which is to preserve others, to live in peace, to treat others well, where the option to not do that looks appealing to anyone, it's like a huge argument for systemic reforms. Because out of character here, children, people's children, so precious to them, and your family members. And if you can be like, oh, this institution killed my mom, it is sad that anyone felt like this was the right move. But if you look at the context, you read these stories, it's really hard to square all the parts of this, because losing people that you love to an inhumane system that treats you that way, it's, yeah.
If I could change one thing other than the event is going to happen, but I could change one thing around the event, I would change the timing, because right now a public outcry and systemic change in this administration, I don't think it's going to get very far. If the different outcome in November, if people can be nice and angry for 4.5 years, maybe we'll get some systemic change. But I fear the incoming leadership will be deaf to any anger.
Well, do you see the inhumane system and its representatives saying, if we change things and make it more humane, then the terrorists, the assassins win. We got to stand firm and deny coverage and claw back every penny from people.
Yeah.
Protect our precious insurance CEOs. You know, they work so hard deciding who does and doesn't deserve care, and they do an important job, and they keep Americans from ever having to wait in line for healthcare, because, you know, in Canada, it might take you a while to get an appointment. So Americans never have to deal with that, I hear. You can just get an appointment whenever you want, as long as you have enough money.
No, it's a giant scam, and it's a shame. And no one in an insurance company has ever made me healthier. They don't add value to the system. And they used to be hospitals and insurance companies, health insurance companies in the like 40s and 50s and 60s were all non-for-profit. And then, of course, that changed. Now you can make money off sick people, which is dubious at best, immoral at worst. And this CEO can ask the devil when he gets there.
You can say what you want about our system, but I mean, nobody has tried to assassinate. I don't even know who you would target. Someone in like the health department or something. I don't even know how it works, but yeah. I had to wait a few weeks to get an appointment, or the surgery was like scheduled for 4 months from now. That's like some of the worst stuff that happens in our society. You're like, shit, 4 months. That's going to suck, but you still get the surgery.
I feel like one of the best action movie tropes is when the hero, the villain, someone who's on the run, has been injured and goes in with a gun to a healthcare establishment saying, fix me up, fix me up. And then maybe they take someone hostage. Maybe they fall in love with the doctor that they've taken, you know. So why have the middleman? Don't involve the insurance company in your violent schemes. Take it right to the doctors, and then you can be seen right away.
Yeah, but follow-up care then is just like a huge hassle at that point. Like, you got to do that every time you need a checkup. And
I'm going to be back in 6 weeks to get these bandages off.
Check how my stitches are healing now.
I'm here for my weekly chemo.
Yeah. Don't turn off that dialysis machine. I got my eyeball on you. I'll be here for 6 hours, but I'm watching. Yeah. I think people often have a disconnect between their experience and the fact that there's systems in place that affect their experience. I don't know if that makes any sense, but this idea, I don't want to say, empathy, that's not the right word, but this understanding that we're all experiencing that. And can you believe this happened? This, horrible insurance company denied my claim. We're all doing it, but we don't have to go through that. We are allowing it to happen by not. It's like, we could change this? Yes. And I don't know how that disconnect manifests itself, or I don't know how it manifests. I don't know how where it comes from or what it is.
A weirdly large amount of Americans seem to think the answer to that question of, can we do this differently, is no. And they will, argue for, and they'll give all these economic reasons why it's no. And, it can't. And you point to other countries, and you're like, every other country has it. And they're like, well, just not in America. It wouldn't work here for specific Americans are just different. Yeah.
I think part of the answer to that question is, depoliticization. On our show, we get really political all the time, and we've clearly got there. When people think about issues as being collective issues and understand that they have power when they network and they come together and they share their stories and then they can push for what is needed, it's rooted in individualism, but good collectivism is rooted in a strong individualism. But often what happens, I think the healthcare system is an example of this. David Graeber, who we had on the show before he passed away a couple years back, rest in peace, pour out the 40, he talks about in his debt book about this idea of shame around debt. And it's one of the things that makes it hard to organize debtors is that there's moralism to debt. This kind of I'm not rich enough. And I think that connects in the healthcare system where you have this incredible amount of fees and you have medical debt to get the surgeries you need and stuff. Is it connects to the sense of shame that you're not fulfilling your end of an ethical contract to be able to pay these things off. But obviously in the way that the American system works is people are systematically put in a position where they can never meet their moral responsibility to pay these things off. So it makes it harder for people to find that solidarity, that group thing, and depoliticizes and individualizes it because it becomes this individual failing rather than a political thing to agitate for and organize for. And people need to be reminded they can do that. And they need to be given the tools to find their own hope. And, I think we're in a time that it's lacking a lot of hope, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Well, I'm so glad that you could be here at the first meeting of what I hope. Here's the name of the group that I'm proposing: Improv for Change, with the number 4, because there's 4 of us.
Right.
And so we're going to go from school to school. We're going to go in all the public spaces, and we're going to provide improv that will really make a difference. That will make the insurance companies.
Finally.
Yeah.
Finally.
Yeah. That I think maybe we could get Trump out of office within a year if we do good enough improv.
Yeah. No, and if we figure out where to get out of the scene, if we nail it, getting out of the scene on a good punchline, that's going to do it.
Yeah, what you leave people with is really important. And improv can expand people's perspectives and their sense of what's possible.
You're
playing out these little worlds where hey, America did change their healthcare system. They're like, oh wait, that actually makes sense. Now that I see it play out in front of me.
Hey, kids, teachers, faculty, we are Improv for Change, and we're here today to talk to you about littering.
Boo.
You got to be careful. I think Bill just showed us that if you you want them to clap for us, but then if you say it's about littering, you don't want people to clap for littering. So we really have to be, that's the problem, is if we're kind of using irony and we're acting out positions that we should only improv ways that just demonstrate exactly how we want the audience to think. If we act bad and then we want them to think it's bad, that might be lost on them.
Yeah.
Oh no, that's my entire improv toolkit is being sarcastically saying things I don't agree with.
Let's do a scene.
That's why you're in the group, Aaron. We accept that.
Okay.
We accept that.
Thank you.
Yes, and
we're the 4 non-litterers who are Yes. So this is the premise. We're four people who don't litter.
And then, and we have great lives because of that. Hey, did you hear about Jeremy who was littering and then got cancer?
Oh, such a sad story. I always warned him about that.
Trigger warning, Mark. We can't.
Oh.
Some of the kids here may have family members with diseases, and we just need to be, careful.
And they may be inspired to violence, vigilante violence and propaganda of the deed. And we do not want children to get into that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Wait until you're 18, please.
Hey, did you hear about Jeremy who committed vigilante violence and then he got rickets? I think rickets is more safe.
Sad story. But we warned old Jeremy about the risk of rickets. Mm-hmm. As soon as I saw him on that surveillance video, I texted him, "What are you doing, buddy?"
Pick up that popsicle stick. Don't throw it on the ground.
I think it's a sort of a general starting point for every scene is just shitting on Jeremy. Like, that might be it seems like a promising way to go.
Improv for change against Jeremy.
All the Jeremys in the audience collectively cross their arms right now. They're just like, oh, great. Again. Mm. Again
check
on the Jeremy.
Patreon exit surveys, Jeremy after Jeremy after Jeremy.
Is that problematic? Should we share? What do you think people feel excluded? Should we do sometimes like about Muhammad?
I think it's a common name, so I would be wary of that.
Yeah, maybe we should make up a name that nobody has.
Mm.
It's like an everyman. We can all imagine ourselves as this person with an imaginary name. And that's how the message gets in.
Geet Finkus.
I think we should sacrifice the Jeremys. I think we've gotten this far. You know, we've already aired it. They're not coming back. Let's just admit it. Let's just... Jeremys are over. Like, let's just give up on Jeremys.
We've had some good Jeremys. I don't want to wash our hands, the world wash their hands of Jeremys. Jeremy Irons?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's good acting.
There was a Jeremy that I was first grade and he was second grade, and he said anti-Semitic things. And then I went home and repeated those anti-Semitic things around a Jewish friend of the family, and it was not cool. And I had to say, look, I'm 6 years old. My seven-year-old Jeremy friend, this is an absolutely true story.
Typical Jeremy.
What Jeremy spoke in class that day was not particularly positive.
No, as a kid, yeah. I had a problem with the Jeremy, too. I'll spare the details, but I want to let him off the hook. I want to forgive him. It was a long time ago, but I wouldn't put anti-Semitism past him.
You think Jeremy Irons is even his real name? I mean, I gotta say, no true Jeremy could be as cool as Jeremy Irons.
I'm more of an anti-Todd guy, but if we want to do Jeremy, I'll support your choice to go Jeremy over Todd.
Yes, and Todd.
Yeah, Jeremy and Todd duo. Yeah.
Yeah, because what if Jeremy, there's only so much trouble one person by themselves can get into. You can't say, hey, remember when Jeremy was a lynch mob? It's like, if we have to come up with some more, if we want to be against certain things, we have to come up with some more names.
Yeah, or you have to be like Jeremy M and Jeremy L, and then there's like multiple Jeremys, but that's kind of a mouthful, especially if you have a big group.
If we keep on agitating these Jeremys, though, I wouldn't put it past them to form a lynch mob. If they feel isolated, they feel like they've got limited options, you know, back them in a corner.
Or a rival improv group that is supporting littering and supporting all of these things that we're against, privatized healthcare.
You can't do that with improv, though. It can't be evil. Improv doesn't work if you're evil.
But what if it's like the Washington Generals? And so maybe we could have a schism right now where two of us become the bad improv group and then the good improv group just beats the shit out of them. Like that's the way every scene ends.
Yeah, nice moral.
I mean, improv to change. Yeah. Kind of works.
we are at MLK Elementary School tomorrow. We need to have a plan. Okay. We promised them a collection of improv games and sketches on pressing social issues.
I say we just improvise it.
Can we rehearse once right now to just do the litter skit, and we got to keep it to 3 minutes, no more than 3 minutes. That's what they gave us.
Sure.
And just see how it goes, just to see as a proof of concept. Now that we're going to do, in fact, anything we do now, we can't do on the day, but like just to show that we can do it.
Just another day as a Jeremy in the world. And, oh, that garbage is a little far away. I think I'm just going to drop it here.
Fuck you, Jeremy. Fuck you. fuck you.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
I'm going to use violence against you. Because
Mark, we can't. This is an elementary school. We can't swear and threaten violence.
Okay, well, that's blocking.
Well, then you could come down on me. I'm the Todd. I'm the Todd in the situation. And you could come down on me and then say, yeah, what you just did. So that was good.
Wrap it all in. We're just going to wrap it all in. Sew in the mistakes. The mistakes are part of the pattern.
Yes.
Part of the pattern.
Somebody plays a bum note. You pretend it's a beautiful note. You do things to react to it that make that note fit.
So I have a nice idea of how we could make this all work. Jeremy, why don't you pick up that piece of trash and then bring it over there to the garbage can? And then Todd, you could apologize to Jeremy for the language and the threats of violence. And then we could all go to the park together and watch the birds eating seeds.
Wow. We just changed lives. We just changed a room full of kids for the better. That was amazing.
I think that's good. I mean, I might have to do something a little like unexpected to just wrap up the scene. So that while I'm apologizing, I'll say something anti-Semitic just to wrap it up. But, you know.
Yeah, to show how it's wrong.
Yeah.
And then we'll have your character get cancer.
Todd's are really irredeemable. Jeremy's, they can make right. They're just a bunch of doofuses, but...
Yeah, end on a classic deathbed scene, like, oh, Todd is dying because of the cancer, because of the anti-Semitic comments.
And he's alone. And,
yeah.
I mean, I hope you guys are okay with that. You guys have to kind of get off the stage so I can die alone.
Everybody hands in, change the world on three.
All right. Change.
One, two, three. One, on three. One, two, three.
Change the world.
Yeah, that's all good right. for the Yay. Kids.
Let's exit Yay. That scene. I think we've changed the world by mapping out. I think that we're going to see Improv 4 change groups blossoming. Anybody that thinks of taking up a firearm, they're going to do improv instead.
Well, there is definitely.
These kids, Generation Alpha, they're going to be improving for change every day, all the time.
Improv for change. Improv for change.
That's what the healthcare shooter should have done. He should have come up and been like, okay, and scene. So I'm a small businessman and you are a milkman and we have a dispute over, and then that could have got a conversation going.
This is instead of assassinating the guy or instead of
assassinating him.
So he's like, my assassination was just a scene.
Yeah. Kill him with improv.
Is that a valid legal defense?
Well, I think shooting him actually does make that legal defense a lot harder. Mm. But if he had started an improv scene, he would have a pretty strong defense that he didn't kill him. Because he would have he could have taught him the rules of improv. They could have got going and the surveillance footage would look totally different. And we'd be having a different conversation now as a society, I mean.
Yeah. Boy, that guy was a weirdo. That's the conversation. No, there is definitely that attitude. You'll find it from people. You know, if everybody in the world just took an improv class, we wouldn't have any more wars. War would be over. Everybody took an improv class. Like, you vastly, underestimate or overestimate huge swaths of the population.
You know, I'll do it. I believe that a little bit. I'm like, I did this thing once. It's called like Theater of the Oppressed.
Sure.
Which is like this, you like really loosen yourselves up in groups by doing, it's sort of like proto improv. It's not finding punchlines. It's about like acting silly and stuff before. And I did that at a political conference once and it totally like changed the vibe of the whole day. So yeah, I don't know about world peace, but I do think that a lot of like suit wearing, you know, very serious people, like they got to sit around, make funny faces, get weird sometimes. And if they did that, they'd be more likely to approve claims for people who need it.
Some, yes. I think it may be true for some.
Faced with an absurd world, reacting absurdly, trying to engage people who are connected with inhumane, absurdly horrendous institutions, and just act silly around them.
I used to teach a lot of corporate training improv things, and these were actually for some noteworthy grad school programs. I won't go into any names, but part of it was they would come back early for grad school from their first year. They had some internship over the summer, and they would come back to school for their second year, and they had a little week-long thing where they got together and would take, here's a little workshop on improv. Here's a workshop on DEI things. It wasn't called that then, but here's the various workshops you'll take over the course of the week before class gets going. They're all kind of fun and silly and whatnot. And a number of the people were like, I was making good money on my internship, and now I have to come home a week early? So it's like, oh my gosh. But in these improv workshops, you could segment the entire class, you know, 25 people, like, all right, your marketing, your management, your finance, just based on their posture as they walk in the room when they hear they're going to do improv. It's like, oh my gosh, some of these people are just not going to enjoy this. We'll guarantee they have made the choice to not enjoy it. If I want to go a little bit further, they have chosen to not enjoy themselves. Favorite ever question asked at one of these things. And again, a good number of people are like totally down to clown, having fun, having a great time. But my favorite question ever in the first 5 minutes was someone raised their hand and said, what are the takeaways? Like, we haven't started yet. What do you mean? We haven't even, do you know my name? What are the takeaways?
I just want the bullet points so I can kind of tune out for the rest of this thing.
Yeah. I will. You give me the takeaways. I'll judge them and then tell you how I feel about it.
We have now run the normal chronological course of one of these episodes. So I want to ask my guests, what are your takeaways?
What are your takeaways?
In the improv world, in the philosophy world, what are you going to bring back to your show and make it a richer, more pleasant place to be? Bullshit something good.
You talked about sticking the landing. Here's your chance.
Oh.
Well, I think that making everyone do improv, at the very least, if it doesn't loosen them up and cause world peace, at the very least, we can humiliate some of the people who most deserve to be humiliated in the world. If that's all we get, then that's enough for me.
I concur.
Yeah, there's very few single things that will cause world peace, but I think there's a lot of things that could help. And improv, it probably pushes in the right direction. People have to like meet other people where they're at and kind of think from the perspective of someone else and think on their feet a little bit. I think in general, it's good. Like you could maybe improv your way to like being more evil, but that would probably not happen as frequently. So I think overall it would be good.
I do quite seriously, having done this for so long, do believe that the required empathy and the required mindset to really improvise well precludes some degree of selfishness and precludes some degree of quote-unquote evil. And I would definitely believe that. I do definitely believe that.
Yeah, I agree.
What if there was a war and everybody came just to improv?
I think all wars should be replaced with improvisational sketches where the winner of the sketch.
I think USA and Canada are going to be your top two seeds in that battle. No offense, rest of the world, but there are some fine improvisers from here in North America, and hats off.
Well, if our meeting of the minds between these two podcasts has prevented a larger conflict of improv between the US and Canada, then I'll say this has been worth our time.
Yes. And we can do so much more if we could force everyone to improvise all the time and never plan anything. Just always go with the flow and always just say yes to everything. If we could do that, then world peace, it's within our grasp.
Always.
That's what we're about at Seriously Wrong. That's why we do things the way we do. Because we really do think that a nuclear exchange is a short-term possibility if people don't do improv more.
All right, everybody, look up their podcast, srslywrong.com. You've just gained 4 new listeners.
It's been fantastic working with you all. It was super fun.
Yeah, likewise. Yeah, this is great. Thank you
for
having us. We're going to be up to 7 listeners.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Good to see you. Happy holidays, whatever time of year this comes out. So long. Bankrupt. Bankrupt. Bankrupt.